Jadang stroked his hand down his woolly chest.
Soon, Nikki. I want to give them time to become careless first. When they grow complacent, I will strike north. A great leader must read the nature of the battle to be able to adjust his tactics. We will be liberators now as we move north into the Midlands, bringing the Creator's glory to the people. We must win the hearts and minds of the unconverted.
You have decided this change on your own? You do not consider the will of the Creator in your campaign?
He glared at her insolence as if to tell her she knew better than to even ask such a question.
I am the Emperor. I need not consult our spiritual guides, but since their counsel is always welcome, I've already talked to the priests. They've spoken favorably about my plans. Brother Nerev thinks it wise and has given his blessing. You had better keep to your job of extinguishing any ideas of opposition. If you don't follow my orders, well, no one will miss one sister. I have others.
She was not moved by his threats, real as they were. By his suspicious look, he was beginning to understand her vision, too.
What you are doing is fitting, she said, but it must be cut up into little pieces the people can chew. They do not have the Order's wisdom in seeing what is best for them. The public rarely does. Even one as bull-headed as you must be able to see that I have anticipated your plans by helping those you can't afford to kill to understand that you are sparing them out of your sense of justice. Word of such deeds will win hearts.
He cast her a sidelong glance.
I am the Order's cleansing fire. The fire is a necessary conflagration, but not the important end. It is merely the means to the end. From the ashes I, Jagang, create. New order can sprout and grow. It is this end, this glorious new age of man, that warrants the means. In this, it is my responsibility, not yours, to decide justice, when and how I will dispense it, and who will receive it.
She grew impatient with his vanity. Scorn seeped into her voice.
I have simply put a name to it, Jagang the Just, and begun to spread your new title for you when the opportunity arose. I sacrificed Kadar to that end, for all the same reasons you've listed. It had to be done now in order for it to have the necessary time to spread and flourish, or the new world would soon harden irreversibly against the Order. I chose the time and place, and by using Kadar Kardif's life, a war hero's life, proved your devotion to the cause of the Order above all else. You benefit. Any brute could ignite the conflagration. This new title shows your moral vision, another manifestation of worth over other men. I have planted the vital seed that will make you a hero to the common people, and even more important, to the priests. Are you going to pretend you think the title inadequate, or that it will not serve you well? What I alone have done will help win what your powerful army cannot, willing allegiance without a battle, at a cost of nothing. With Kadar's life, I, Nikki, have made you more than you could make of yourself. I, Nikki, have given you the reputation of honor. I, Nikki, have made you into a leader people will trust because they believe you to be just.
He brooded for a time, turning his gaze from her hot glare. His arm finally fell open and his fingers tenderly trailed down her thigh. The touch was an admission for him, an admission that she was right, even if he would not say the words. After a few moments he yawned, and then his eyes closed. His breathing evened, and he started to drift off into a nap, as was his way with her. He expected her to remain right where she was, so that when he awoke she would be available to him. She supposed she could leave. But it was not time. Not yet. He finally awoke an hour later. Nikki was still staring up at the canopy, thinking about Richard. There seemed to be one piece missing in her plan, one more thing that she felt needed to fall into place. In his sleep, Jagang had rolled over on his side, facing away from her. Now he turned back. His dark eyes took her in with a look of lust rekindled. He drew her close. His body was as warm as a rock in the sun, and only slightly softer.
"Pleasure me,"
he commanded in a husky growl that would have frightened any other woman into doing as he ordered.
"Or what? You will kill me? If I feared that, I would not be here. This is by force, not consent. I will not willingly take part in it, nor will I allow you to deceive yourself into believing that I want you."
He backhanded her, knocking her across the bed.
"You take part willingly."
He seized her by the wrist and dragged her back toward him.
"Why else would you be here?"
"You ordered me here."
He smirked.
"And you came when you could have fled."
She opened her mouth, but she had no answer she could put into words. No answer he would understand. With a grin of victory, he fell on her and pressed his lips to hers. As much as it hurt her, for Jagang, this was gentle behavior. He had told her several times that she was the only woman he ever cared to kiss. He seemed to believe that by expressing those emotions for her, she could have no alternative but to surrender feelings in kind, as if spoken feelings were currency with which he could purchase affection on demand. It was only the beginning of a long night, a long ordeal, she knew. She would have to endure his forceful violation several more times before morning. His question haunted the distant place in her mind. Morning came, accompanied by the dull throbbing of a headache from her succeeding beating, and the sharper aches from the places where he'd struck her when he came to find that what he thought was her willing submission was but a delusion that left him more angered than before. The pillows were stained with her blood. It had been a long night of rare sensations experienced. She knew she was evil, and deserved to be violated in such a brutal fashion. She could offer no moral objection to it, even in the terrible things he did to her. Jagang was nowhere near as corrupt as she. Jagang erred in simple matters of the flesh, and that could only be expected. All people were corrupt in the flesh. But because of her indifference to the suffering around her, she failed in matters of the spirit. That, she knew, was pure evil. That was why she deserved to suffer whatever he did to her. For the moment, that deep, dark place within came close to being sated. Nikki touched her mouth and found the cuts painful, but closed. The healing of wounds, though, did not offer the warranted sensation of receiving them, so she resolved to have one of the other sisters heal her rather than give him the satisfaction of witnessing her suffering, the inconvenience of the injuries. With that, her mind turned to thoughts of Sister Lyudmila. Nikki realized that Jagang wasn't in bed beside her. She sat up and saw him in a chair not far away, watching her. She pulled the sheet up to cover her breasts, speckled with droplets of dried blood.
"You are a pig."
"You can't get enough of me. Despite what you say, Nikki, you wish to be with me. If not, why would you stay?"
Those nightmare eyes of his watched her, trying to find a way into her mind. There was none. He could no longer be a nightmare for her. Richard guarded her mind.
"Not for the reasons you wish to believe. I stay because the ultimate cause of the order is a moral one. I wish it to succeed. I wish the suffering of life's helpless victims to end. I wish everyone to finally be equal and to finally live with everything they need. I have worked nearly my entire life for those goals. The order can see to it that such a fair world comes to be. If I must endure you, even aid you for such an end, then it is but an insignificant gnat to swallow."
"You sound so very noble, but I think there is something more basic behind it. I think you would have left if you could, or..."
He smiled.
"If you could, you would have left if you really wanted to. Which is it then, Nikki?"
She didn't want to contemplate the question. Her head hurt.
"What's all the talk about you building a palace?"
"So you heard, then."
He took a deep breath and sighed wistfully.
"It will be the grandest palace ever built, a fitting place for the Emperor of the Imperial Order, for the man who rules both the old and the new worlds."
"The man who wants to rule. Lord Rahl stands in your way. How many times has he bested you now?
Jagang's eyes flashed a rage she knew could turn violent. Richard had frustrated Jagang a number of times. Even if Richard hadn't been victorious over Jagang, he had stung him. Quite an accomplishment, really, for such a tiny force against the array of the Imperial Order. A man like Jagang hated the humiliation of a sting almost as much as he would hate to be gored.
"I will eliminate Richard Rahl. Don't you worry,"
Jagang said in a low growl. She changed the subject back to what she really wanted to know about.
"Since when has the all-conquering Emperor Jagang turned soft and wanted to live in splendor?"
"Ah, but I am Jagang the Just now, remember?"
He returned to the bed and flopped down beside her.
"Nikki, I'm sorry I hurt you. I never want to hurt you, but you make me do it. You know I care about you."
"You care about me, yet you beat me? You care about me, yet you never bothered to tell me of such an enormous project as the building of a palace? I am insignificant to you."
"I told you. I'm sorry I hurt you. But that was your own fault, and you know it."
He spoke the words almost lovingly. With mention of the palace, his face had softened into a visionary look.
"It's only proper and fitting that I at last have the prestige of such a monumental edifice."
"You? The man who was content in tents in the field now wants to live in a resplendent building? Why?"
"Because once I bring the new world under the guidance of the Order, I will owe it to all the people as their leader to be seen in a majestic setting, but it will have more than simple splendor."
"But of course," she snapped.
He gathered up her hand.
"Nikki, I will proudly wear the title Jagang the Just. You're right. The time has come for such a move. I was only angered because you wrongly made that move without first discussing it with me. But let us forget that now."
She said nothing. He gripped her hand more tightly to show his sincerity, she supposed.
"You're going to love the palace when it's finished."
He ran the back of the fingers of his other hand tenderly down her cheek.
"We will all live there for a very long time."
The words struck a chord in her. A very long time? For the first time she realized there was something more to this than simply his vanity of wanting a palace after Richard had denied him the palace of the prophets. He wanted what else Richard had denied him. Could it be? She looked up into his face, searching for the answer. He simply smiled at the questions in her eyes.
"Construction has already begun,"
he said, turning his words away from those questions.
"Architects and great builders from all over the old world have gathered to work on it. Everyone wants to be part of such a grand project."
"And Brother Narev?" she probed. "What does he think of building such a frivolous monument to one man when there is important work to be done for so many needy people?"
"Brother Narev and his disciples greatly favor the project."
Jagang flashed her a sly smile.
"They will live there too, of course." Understanding washed over her. "He's going to spell the new palace," she whispered in astonishment to herself.
Jagang only smiled as he watched her, clearly pleased with her reaction. Brother Narev had been at the Palace of the Prophets almost as long as she, nearly 170 years, but in all that time he seemed to have aged only 10 or 15 years, the same as she. No one but Nikki ever knew he was anything but a stable hand. They didn't know he was gifted. In all that time with her, along with everyone else, paying him little heed, he must have been studying the spell around the palace, from what she knew. Most of Brother Narev's disciples had been young wizards from the Palace of the Prophets. They had access to the vaults. They, too, could have added information that helped him. But could he really do such a thing?
"Tell me about the palace," she said,
preferring his voice to the silent scrutiny of his nightmare eyes. He kissed her first, the way a man kisses a woman, not like a brute kisses a victim. She endured it with no more favor than any of the rest of it. He seemed not to notice, this time, and by the smile of his face appeared to have enjoyed it.
It will be a walk of nearly 15 miles to walk all the halls.
He swept a hand out and began to give shape to the grand palace in the air before them. As he went on, he stared off at his imaginary outline, hanging there in space.
The world has never seen anything to match it. While I carry on with our work of bringing the hope of the Order to the new world, of bringing the true word of the Creator to the wicked and the greedy, of banishing the selfish ideals of the ancient religion of magic back in my homeland, the work of building the palace will go on. Quarries will be busy for years extracting all the rock that will go into the construction. The variety of stone will leave no doubt about the glory of the place. The marble will be the finest. The woods will be only the best. Every material going into the palace will be exceptional. The best craftsmen will shape it all into a grand structure.
Yes, but despite the fact that others may live there, she mocked in cool disdain, it will be but a pompous monument to only one man, the great and powerful Emperor Jagang.
No, it will be devoted to the glory of the Creator.
Oh? And will the Creator be taking up residence there too, then? Jagang scowled at her blasphemy.
Brother Nariv wishes the palace to be instructional to the people. He is contributing his spiritual guidance to the undertaking, and will personally oversee the construction while I cleanse the way for the Order.
That was what she wanted to know. He stared off at the invisible shape still hanging in the air before them. His voice took on a reverent tone.
Brother Nariv shares my vision in this. He has always been like a father to me. He put the fire in my belly. His spiritual direction has been a lifelong inspiration. He allows me to stand at the fore and take the glory of our victories, but I would be nothing without his moral teachings. What I win is only as the fist of the Order, and a fist is but one part of the whole, as we are all but insignificant fragments of society as a whole. You are right. Many others could stand in my place for the Order, but it is my part to be the one to lead us. I would never do anything to betray the trust Brother Nariv has placed in me. That would be like betraying the Creator himself. He guides the way for all of us. I only thought to build a fitting palace for us all, a place from which to govern for the benefit of the people. It was Brother Nariv who took up the dream and gave it moral meaning by envisioning everyone, when they see the vast structure, as seeing man's place in the new order, seeing that man can never live up to the glory of the Creator, and that individually he is but a meaningless member of the greater brotherhood of man, and thus can have no greater part to play than to uplift all his brothers in need, so all will thrive together. Yet it will also be a place that will humble every man before it by showing him his utter insignificance before the glory of his Creator, by showing man's depravity, his tortured, contorted, inferior nature, for all men in this world are such as this.
Nicky could almost see such a place when he spoke of it. It would indeed be a humbling inspiration to the people. He came near to inspiring her with such talk, as Brother Nariv had at one time inspired her.
"This is why I have stayed," she whispered, "because the cause of the Order is righteous."
The peace that had been missing was now found. In the quiet, Jagang kissed her again. She allowed him to finish it and then pushed away from his embrace. With a distant smile, he watched as she rose and began dressing.
"You're going to love it there, Nicky. It will be a place befitting you."
"Oh? As the slave queen?"
"As a queen, if you wish it. I plan to give you the kind of authority you've never had before. We'll be happy there, you and I, truly happy. For a long, long time, we'll be happy there."
She drew a stocking up her leg. When Sister Eulysia and the four with her found a way to leave you, I chose to ignore their discovery and stay, because I know the Order is the only moral course for mankind. But now I...
You stayed because you would be nothing without the Order.
She looked away from his eyes. She tugged her dress down over her head, poked her arms through the sleeves, and worked the skirt over her hips. I am nothing without the Order, and I am nothing with it. No one is. We are all inadequate, miserable creatures. That is the nature of man. That is what the Creator teaches. But the Order shows man his duty to make a better life for the good of all.
And I am the Emperor of the Imperial Order.
His red face cooled more slowly than it had heated. He gestured vaguely in the hollow silence, and he went on in a more mellow tone.
The world will be one under the Order. We'll be happy at the palace when it's finished, Nikki. You and I, under the spiritual guidance of our priests. You'll see. In time when...
I'm leaving. She drew on a boot.
I will not permit it.
Nikki paused at pulling on her other boot and glanced up into his dark eyes. She flicked a finger toward a stone vase on a table against the far wall. Light flashed. The vase exploded in a cloud of dust and chips with a sound that rocked the room. The drapery shuddered. The panes in the windows chattered. When the dust had settled, she said,
"You will not permit it?"
She bent forward and began doing up the laces on her boots. Jagang strolled over to the table and dragged his fingers through the dust that was all that remained of the stone vase. He turned back to her in all his naked, hairy, imperial glory.
"Are you threatening me? Do you actually think you could choose your power against me?"
"I do not think it." She yanked the laces tight. "I know it. The truth is, I choose not to."
He struck a defiant pose.
"And why is that?"
Nikki stood and faced him.
"Because, as you said, the Order needs you, or rather a brute like you. You serve the ends of the Order. You are their fist. You bring that cleansing fire. You perform that function very well. It could even be said that you perform that service with extraordinary talent. You are Jagang the Just. You see the wisdom in the title I have given you, and will use it to further the cause of the Order. That is why I choose not to use my power against you. It would be like using my power against the Order, against my own duty to the future of mankind."
"Then why do you want to leave?"
"Because I must."
She gave him a look of icy determination and deadly threat. "Before I go, I will be spending some time with Sister Lydmilla. You are to immediately and completely withdraw from her mind, and remain out of it the entire time I am with her. We will use your tents, since you are not using them. You will see to it that everyone leaves us entirely alone for however long it takes. Anyone who enters without my express permission will die. That includes you. You have my oath as a sister of the dark on that. When I'm finished, and after I leave, you may do what you will with Sister Lydmilla. Kill her, if that is your wish, although I don't see why you would want to bother, since she is going to be doing you a great service."
"I see." His huge chest rose. He let the deep breath out slowly. "And how long will you be gone this time, Nikki?"
"This is not like the other times. This is different."
"How long?"
"Perhaps only a short time. Perhaps a very long time. I don't yet know. Leave me alone to do as I must, and if I can, I will one day return to you."
He gazed into her eyes, but he could not look into her mind. Another man protected her mind and kept her thoughts her own. All the time she had spent with Richard, Nikki had never learned that which she hungered most to know, but in one way she had learned too much. Most of the time she was able to entomb that unwanted knowledge under the numb weight of indifference. Occasionally, though, it would, like now, unexpectedly rise up out of its tomb to seize her. When it did, she was helpless in its grip, and could do nothing but wait for the oblivion of numb detachment to bury it yet again. Staring into the long, dark night of Jagang's inhuman eyes, eyes that revealed nothing but the bleakness of his soul, Nikki touched her finger to the gold ring Jagang had ordered pierced through her lower lip to mark her as his personal slave. She released a thread-thin channel of subtractive magic, and the ring ceased to exist.
"And where are you going, Nikki?"
"I am going to destroy Richard Rahl for you." Chapter 15. Zedekus Zul Zorander had been able to talk and smile his way past the other soldiers, but these were not moved by his explanation that he was Richard's grandfather. He supposed he should have entered the camp in the daylight. It would have avoided a lot of the suspicion, but he was tired and hadn't thought it would be that much trouble. The soldiers were properly suspicious, which greatly pleased him. But he was weary and had more important things to do than answer questions. He wanted to ask them instead.
"Why do you want to see him?" the bigger guard repeated.
"I told you, I am Richard's grandfather."
"This is the Richard Cipher you're talking about, who you now say—"
"Yes, yes, that was his name when he grew up, and that's what I'm used to calling him. But I meant Richard Rahl, who he is now. You know, Lord Rahl, your leader. I would think being the grandfather of someone as important as your Lord Rahl would accord me some respect, maybe even a hot meal."
"I could say I'm Lord Rahl's brother," the man said, keeping a tight grip on the bit in the mouth of Zed's horse. "But that doesn't make it so." Zed sighed.
"Oh, very true."
As vexing as it was, Zed at some dim inward level was pleased to see that the men weren't stupid or easily duped.
"But I am also a wizard,"
Zed added, drawing low his eyebrows for dramatic effect.
"If I wasn't friendly, I could simply do you up crisp and be on my way past the both of you."
"And if I wasn't friendly," the man said, "I could give the signal, now that we've let you venture in this far so that you're completely surrounded, and the dozen archers hiding all around you in the dark would let fly the arrows that are at this moment trained on you, as they have been ever since you approached our encampment."
"Ah,"
Zed said, holding up a finger in triumph,
"all very well and good, but—"
"And even if I were to die in a final flame of service to the Lord Rahl, those arrows will let fly without me needing to give any signal."
Zed harumphed, lowering his finger, but inwardly he smiled. Here he was, first wizard, and if he weren't entering a friendly camp, he would have been bested in this game of banter by a simple soldier. Or maybe not.
"In the first place, Sergeant, I am, as I said, a wizard, and so I knew of the archers and have already dealt with the threat by spelling their arrows so they will fly no truer and with no more deadly effect than wet dish rags. I have nothing to fear from them. In the second place, even if I'm lying, which is precisely what you are considering at this very moment, you would have made a mistake by telling me of the threat, which enables me, as a wizard of great repute, to now use my magic to nullify it."
A slow smile came to the man's face.
"Why, that's remarkable."
He scratched his head. He looked to his partner, and then back to Zed.
"You're right. That was exactly what I was thinking, that you could be lying about knowing the archers were back there in the dark."
"You see there, young man, you're not so smart after all."
"You're right, sir. I'm not. Here I was, so busy talking to you and being so intimidated by your wizardly powers and all, that I plumb forgot to tell you about what else was out there in the dark watching you."
The soldier's brow lowered. "And it would be a mite more trouble than any simple arrows, I dare say." Zed scowled down at the man.
"Now see here.
Why don't you just do as I ask, and come down here in the light where I can see you better and answer some of our questions?" With a sigh of resignation, Zed dismounted. He gave Spider a reassuring pat on her neck. Spider, a chestnut-colored mare, had a leggy black splotch on her creamy rump, from which she had acquired her name. Young, strong, and possessing an agreeably spirited nature, she made a pleasant traveling companion. The two of them had been through a great deal together. Zed stepped into the intimate circle of light from the watchfire. He turned his hand up and brought a white-hot flame to life just above the flesh of his palm. The two soldiers' eyes widened. Zed scowled.
"But I have my own fire, if you need to see better. Does this help you see things better, Sergeant?"
Why, yes, it does, sir," the man stammered.
"Yes, it does indeed," a woman said as she stepped into the light. "Why didn't you simply use your Han and give a display of your craft in the first place?"
She motioned into the darkness as if signaling for others to stand down. She turned back with a smile that was no more than courteous. "Welcome, wizard." Zed bowed from the waist.
"Zedekus Zul Zarander, first wizard at your service."
"Sister Philippa, Wizard Zarander, I am aide to the prelate."
She gestured, and the sergeant took the reins from Zed's hand to lead the horse away. Zed clapped the man on the back to let him know there were no hard feelings, and then gave a similar pat to Spider to let her know it was all right to go with the men.
"Treat her especially well, Sergeant. Spider is a friend."
The sergeant saluted by tapping his fist to his heart.
"She'll be treated as a friend, sir."
After the soldiers had led Spider away, Zed asked,
"The prelate? Which one?"
The narrow-jawed sister clasped her hands together.
"Prelate Verna, of course."
"Oh, yes, of course, Prelate Verna."
The Sisters of the Light didn't know Anne was still alive. At least she had been alive when Zed last saw her, several months past. Anne had written in a journey book telling Verna that she was alive, but also asking her to keep that information private for the time being. Zed had been hoping that perhaps Anne had turned up at the Daharan army camp with her Sisters of the Light. He was sorry to learn she hadn't. It boded ill for her. Zed held no favor with the Sisters of the Light. A lifetime of disapproval was not easily forgotten. But he had come to respect Anne as a woman of self-discipline and resolve, even if he took a dim view of some of her convictions and past objectives. He knew that at the least he and Anne shared many important values. He didn't know about the rest of the sisters, though. Sister Philippa appeared middle-aged, but with sisters that meant little. She might have lived at the Palace of the Prophets for only a year, or for centuries. With dark eyes and high cheekbones, she was an exotic-looking woman. As in the Midlands, there were places in the old world where the people had unique physical characteristics. Sister Philippa moved the way high-minded women tended to move, like a swan taken to human form.
"How may I be of service, Wizard Zarender?"
"Zen will do. Is this prelate of yours awake?"
"She is. This way, Zed, if you please."
He fell in behind the woman as she glided off toward the dark shapes of tents.
"Got anything to eat around here?"
She looked back over her shoulder.
"This late?"
"Well, I've been traveling hard. It's not really all that late, is it?"
In the dark, she assessed him briefly.
"I don't believe it's ever too late, according to the teachings of the Creator. And you do look emaciated from your travels, I'm sure."
Her smile warmed a little.
"Food is always at the ready. We have soldiers who are active through the night and need to be fed. I believe I could find something for you."
She returned her gaze to the indiscernible path.
"That would be a kindness,"
Zed said in a jovial voice as he scowled at her back.
"And I'm not emaciated. I'm wiry. Most women find lean men appealing."
"Do they? I never knew that."
Sisters of the Light were a lofty lot, Zed thought ruefully. For thousands of years it had been a death sentence for them to even set foot in the New World. Zed had always been a little more lenient, but not by much. In the past, the sisters only came into the New World to steal boys with the gift. They claimed to be saving them. It was a wizard's task to train wizards. If they came for the reason of taking a boy back beyond the Great Barrier to their palace, Zed viewed it as the gravest of crimes. They had come for that very reason only the winter before and taken Richard. Sister Verna was the one who had captured him and taken him to the old world. Under the spell of their palace, he could have ended up being there for centuries. Leave it to Richard to make friends with the Sisters of the Light of all people. Zed guessed he and the sisters were even. that they had good reason to view him in a harsh way. He had, after all, set the spell that Richard had used to destroy their palace. But Anne had helped, knowing it was the only way to prevent Jagang from capturing the palace and acquiring the prophecies therein for his own purposes. All around, guards, big guards, prowled the encampment. In chain mail and leather armor they were an imposing sight. They watched everything as they slipped through the darkness. The camp was relatively quiet, considering its size. Noise could give away a variety of information to an enemy. It was not easy to see to it that this many men kept quiet. "I'm relieved that our first incursion by someone possessing the gift turned out to be a friend," the sister said.
"And I'm glad to see that the gifted are helping to keep watch. But there are types of enemy forays that the rickety sentries could not identify."
Zed wondered if they were really prepared for those kinds of troubles. "If magic is involved, we will be there to detect it."
"I suppose you were watching me the whole time."
"I was," Sister Philippa said, "from the time you crossed the line of hills back there." Zed scratched his jaw.
"Really? That far away?"
With a satisfied smirk, she said, "That far." He peered over his shoulder into the night.
"Both of you, very good."
She halted and turned to him. "Both? You knew there were two of us watching?" Zed smiled innocently.
"But of course. You were just watching. She was further away, following, conjuring some little nasty, should I prove hostile."
Sister Philippa blinked in astonishment. "Remarkable. You could sense her touching her hand from that distance?" Zed nodded with satisfaction.
"They didn't make me first wizard just because I was wiry."
Sister Philippa's smile finally looked sincere. "I am relieved you came as a friend rather than one intent on harm." There was more truth in that than the woman knew. Zed had experience in the unpleasant, dirty business of magic and warfare. When he'd come near their camp, he saw the holes in their defense and the weaknesses in the way they used the gift for their purpose. They were not thinking as their enemy would think. Had he been intent on harm, the entire camp would be in an uproar by now, despite what they had done to prepare for one such as he. Sister Philippa turned back to the knight to lead him on. It was somewhat unsettling for Zed to walk through a Daharan camp, even though he knew they were now fighting on the same side. He had spent a good deal of his life dealing with Daharans as the deadly enemy. Richard had changed all that. Zed sighed. He sometimes thought that Richard might make friends with Thunder and Lightning and invite them both to dinner. Dark shapes of tents and wagons loomed all around. Pole weapons were stacked upright in neat ranks, ready should they be suddenly needed. Some soldiers snored, and some sat around in the dark talking in low voices or laughing quietly, while others patrolled the inky shadows. Those passed close enough for Zed to smell their breath, but in the darkness he could not make out their faces. Well-hidden sentries were stationed at every possible approach route. There were very few fires in the camp, and those were mostly watchfires set away from the main force, leaving the mass of the camp a dark hole of night. Some armies carried on a considerable amount of work at night, performing repairs or making things they needed, and letting the men do as they would. These men remained quiet throughout the night, so watching eyes and listening ears could gain little, if any, help for an invading force. These were well-trained, disciplined, professional soldiers. From a distance, it was difficult to tell the size of the camp. It was huge. Sister Philippa brought Zed to a sizable tent, one tall enough to stand in. Light from lamps hanging inside gave the canvas walls and roof a soft amber glow. She ducked beneath a tent line and poked her head in under the flap. "I have a wizard out here who wishes to see the prelate." Zed heard muffled, astonished acknowledgment from inside. "Go on in." Sister Philippa smiled while giving his back a gentle push. "I'll see if I can find you some dinner."
"I would be not only grateful, but greatly in your debt," Zed told her.
As he stepped inside the tent, the people were just coming to their feet to greet him.
"Zed, you old fool, you be alive!"
Zed grinned as Addie, the old sorceress known as the Bone Woman in their adopted homeland of Westland, rushed into his arms. He let out a grunt as she momentarily squeezed the wind from his lungs. He smoothed her square-cut, jaw-length black and gray hair as he held her head to his chest.
"I promised you'd see me again now, didn't I?"
"Yes, you did,"
she whispered into his heavy robes. She pushed back, holding his arms, and looked him over. She reached up and smoothed down his unruly, wavy white hair.
"You look as lovely as ever," he told her.
She peered at him with her completely white eyes. Her sight had been taken from her when she was but a young woman. Addie now saw by means of her gift. In some ways she saw better.
"Where be your hat?"
"Hat?"
"I bought you a fine hat, and you lost it. I see you still have not replaced it. You told me you would get another. I believe you promised."
Zed hated the hat with the long feather she'd bought for him when they'd acquired the rest of his clothes. He'd rather be wearing the simple robes befitting a wizard of his rank and authority, but Addie had lost them after he purchased the fancy maroon robes with black sleeves and cowled shoulders he now wore. Three rows of silver brocade circled the cuffs. Thicker gold brocade ran around the neck and down the front. A red satin belt set with a gold buckle gathered the outfit at his thin waist. Such clothes marked one with the gift as an initiate. For one without the gift, such clothes befitted nobility, or in most places a wealthy merchant, so although Zed disliked the ostentatious attire, it had at times been a valuable disguise. Besides, Addie liked him in the maroon robes. The hat, though, was too much for him. It had been misplaced. He noted that Addie had managed to keep her simple clothes along the way, yellow and red beads around the neck of her robes sewn in the shapes of the ancient symbols of her profession of sorceress, were the only ornamentation she wore.
"I've been busy,"
he said, flicking his hand, hoping to dismiss the matter.
"Or I would have replaced the hat."
"Bah!" she scoffed. "You'll be up to mischief."
"Why, I've been—"
"Hush now,"
Addie said, holding his arm in a tight grip. She held out the long, thin fingers of her other hand.
"Zed, this be Verna, prelate of the Sisters of the Light."
The woman looked to be in her late 30s, perhaps early 40s. Zed knew her to be much older. Anne, Verna's predecessor, had told him Verna's age, and while he couldn't recall the exact number, it was somewhere close to 160 years. Young for a sister of the light. She had simple, attractive features and brown hair with just enough curl in body to add a hint of sophistication. Her intent, brown-eyed gaze looked as if it could scour lichen off granite. By the lines of a resolute expression enduringly fixed on her face, she appeared to be a woman with a shell as tight as a beetle's and just as hard. Zed bowed his head.
"Prelate, first wizard Zedekus Azul Zarander, at your service."
He let her know by his tone that it was merely a figure of speech. This was the woman who had taken Richard away to the old world, even if she believed it was to save his life. Zed, as first wizard, viewed such an act as abhorrent. The sisters, sorceresses all, believed they could train gifted young men to be wizards. They were wrong. Such a task could only be adequately accomplished by another wizard. She offered her hand with the sunburst-patterned gold ring of office. He bent forward and kissed it, out of what he thought must be their custom. She pulled his hand close when he had finished and kissed it in return. "I am humbled to meet the man who helped raise our Richard. You would have to be as rare a person as I found him to be when we helped begin his training." She forced a chuckle. "We found it a formidable labor, trying to teach that grandson of yours." Zed slightly altered his opinion of the woman, treating her with greater caution. The air in the tent was stuffy and uncomfortable.
"That is because you are all oxen trying to teach a horse to run. Your sister should stick to work more befitting your nature."
"Yes, yes, you be a brilliant man, Zed," Addie scoffed. "Simply brilliant. One of these days I may even come to believe you."
She tugged his sleeve, turning him from Verna's scarlet face.
"And this be Warren,"
Addie said. Zed inclined his head toward Warren, but the boy was already falling to his knees and bowing his blonde head.
"Wizard Zarinder,
This is quite an honor. He popped back up and seized Zed's hand in both of his, pumping it until Zed thought his arm might come undone at the shoulder.
I'm so pleased to meet you. Richard told me all about you. I'm so pleased to meet a wizard of your standing and talent. I would be so happy to learn from you.
The happier he looked, the more Verna scowled.
Well, I'm pleased to meet you too, my boy.
Zed didn't tell Warren that Richard had never mentioned him. But that was not out of disrespect or neglect. Richard had never had a chance to tell Zed a great number of very important things. Zed thought he could sense through Warren's grip that the young man was a wizard of unusual talents. A bear of a man, with a curly, rust-colored beard, a white scar from his left temple to his jaw, and heavy eyebrows, stepped forward, his grayish-green eyes fixed on Zed with fierce intensity, but he had a grin like a soldier on a long march who had spotted a lonely cask of ale.
"General Rybish, commander of the Daharan forces here in the south," the man said, taking Zed's hand when Warren at last surrendered it, and stepped back beside Verna. "Lord Rahl's grandfather! What good fortune to see you, sir!"
His grip was firm, but not painful. It got tighter.
"What very good fortune!"
"Yes, indeed," Zed muttered. "Unfortunate as the circumstances are, General Rybish."
"Unfortunate?"
"Well, never mind for the moment,"
Zed said, waving off the question. He asked another instead.
"Tell me, General, have you begun to dig all the mass graves yet? Or do you intend the few who are left alive to simply abandon all the bodies?"
"Bodies?"
"Why, yes, the bodies of all your troops who are going to die."
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 5.